This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories, and we tell stories about everything here on this show, from the arts to sports and from business to history and everything in between, including your story. Send them to OurAmericanStories.com. They're some of our favorites. And now we bring you the story of Taylor Dooley. She's an actress most known for her role as Lava Girl in The Adventures of Shark Boy and Lava Girl, the 2005 film. She has returned to acting today in the Netflix film We Can Be Heroes. Here's Taylor with her story.
I was just a little girl with a big dream when I was probably 10. I was about 10 when I caught kind of the acting bug a little bit. I had been through a few modeling classes and was modeling and having fun. My dad saw this thing to be able to take some acting classes and thought, hey, maybe you might like that as well. So I did. Absolutely fell in love with it, to my parents' dismay. They didn't know anything about the acting world or anything about it, nor wanted me really to be into it much. But once their daughter fell in love with it, they kind of just really pushed me through that. We were living in Arizona at the time, and my mom was crazy enough and wonderful enough to start driving me back and forth to auditions for commercials and such. So we were driving like 8 hours a day to come to California to go on an audition just to drive back home, which was absolutely insane. And then my agency suggested that I should go on theatrical auditions for TV shows, movies. So they kind of switched me over to there. And that's when one of my very first auditions was The Adventures of Sharkboy and Lava Girl. I ended up booking that, which was such a special, special thing. And that became kind of the catapulting thing that took my career over a little bit, which is absolutely amazing and I feel super, super blessed for. But growing up in the business is kind of very crazy, and I think that people don't touch on it as much. We kind of hear about it a little bit in the news, and with people who grow up in the business, you kind of, the media, I think, shies away a little bit from that. Growing up in and around with everybody around the same age as I was, you know, hanging out with everyone from Nickelodeon and Disney and all those shows and all those fun things after Sharkboy and Lava Girl came out. It was so much fun, and I had like such an interesting childhood getting able to meet all these fun people. But my parents the entire time had this thought that it just was a hard childhood. They thought that I should be able to be a kid and not be working. And so that's kind of when people find me nowadays on Instagram, everyone's like, where did you go? After Sharkboy and Lava Girl, I kind of vanished a little bit from the entertainment industry. And it was because my parents had the want to take me out and make me live a normal, regular life. When you're a child actor, you have usually, I mean, even as an adult, you have a manager and an agent, usually. And when you're a kid, they don't really talk to you, they talk to your parents. So I didn't really understand or know much of the business aspect of anything. It just was my parents handling everything. So they behind the scenes knew of a lot of stuff that I didn't know that was going on, which is why I had in my brain more license to be angry at them when they did pull me out, because I didn't know all the business end stuff that came from it. But my parents just felt like it just didn't feel like you could have an authentic childhood if you were busy being a little adult at 10, 11, 12, even as a teenager. Because when you're a kid, you just usually have to worry about kid things. But when you're in the business, you start worrying about things like, you know, how many auditions did you have before you got a call back, or how many times you've booked something, all your friends are working and you're not working, but you're only 14. Most people aren't working at your age. So there's so many rejections that happen before you get one yes, that as a kid, it's really hard to swallow that, because you're not usually dealing with that amount of rejection. As an adult, you go on work interviews and you're prepared for that mentally and emotionally. But as a kid, you can't separate the, why didn't I get the, you're selling yourself as an actor a little bit, you know, and it hurts when you don't get things consistently for a while. I also twofold had something else going on where I kind of grew really early. And in the business, that's, they want older kids that look younger, not younger kids that look older. And so I had a lot of people want to book me for auditions right after Sharkboy and Lava Girl. And then I got so old looking that they were like, well, she doesn't look 14. And I was 14 at the time. I'm like, but I am 14. So my parents were just looking around and just seeing how all this rejection was like devastating my confidence in who I was. And I was my parents always describe me to myself. They'll tell me that I was like a really self-confident, super outgoing, they would say, and I was like a little spark plug. And a few years in the business, and it was really, I was getting depressed and I was getting sad, because when you love something that much, I couldn't understand why I wasn't working when some of my friends were, or things weren't happening for me. And it just was really devastating to who I was. So my parents didn't like that. And they were really worried about what that would look like and translate to into adulthood or young adulthood, just having that self-doubt. And so they wanted to put me in high school to just take a break from it and not worry about it and to be a normal kid so that I could come back as an adult and be able to handle the rejection and everything that comes with being an actor. At the time, I didn't agree with them. And I think my mom put me in high school, and I remember crying in the front office, telling her that she did not love me because she was making me stop acting and go to school like a normal teenager. And I remember just being such a wreck in the front office of this high school. Like, if you leave me here, I promise you just hate me. You must hate me. I was so upset with her.
And you're listening to Taylor Dooley tell the story of her experience in Hollywood as a child. By the way, everything she's saying applies to grownups too. It's a tough, tough life. It is a life filled with rejection. And by the way, her parents, luckily for her, saw the change in her life, the depression, from a spark plug to a depressed teenager. And so the family interceded, intervened, and protected their daughter. When we come back, more with Taylor Dooley, her story, here on Our American Stories. Folks, if you love the great American stories we tell and love America like we do, we're asking you to become a part of the Our American Stories family. If you agree that America is a good and great country, please make a donation. A monthly gift of $17.76 is fast becoming a favorite option for supporters. Go to OurAmericanStories.com now and go to the donate button and help us keep the great American stories coming. That's OurAmericanStories.com. And we return to Our American Stories and the story of Taylor Dooley. She played Lava Girl in The Adventures of Sharkboy and Lava Girl, but her parents decided that the acting business was not a good environment for a 14-year-old girl, so they took her out and put her in regular high school. Taylor was upset at first, but now, more than 15 years later, she has a different perspective. Back to Taylor.
And hindsight, it ended up being the best thing to ever happen to me, because I got to kind of live not such a sheltered life and do some of my other life goals before I was able to get back into acting now. So I'm thankful that they did that, because I definitely learned a lot about myself. And I had a few years, I think, that after leaving the industry that I kind of got really upset and mad at God for a while, because I would say to him, why did you put something so deep on my heart? Like, why do I love this so much, but yet I can't do it? Like, my friends are working and I'm not. Why is that? And I realized throughout the years that it was just because I had already always prayed and wanted an adult career and to be an adult actor, because I never really wanted to do the kid fluff stuff. I was always so much older than my age acting. I was like 13, and I used to tell everyone I wanted to be like Natalie Portman. I just wanted a very serious adult career, which doesn't happen when you're a kid usually. So it kind of was, I think, God's way of answering my prayer in a roundabout way. You just never know when you're in it, and it feels emotional when you're in it. And now that I'm on the other side of it, I'm thankful that I didn't work through those years and that my parents pulled me out and I was able to take that break, because it allowed me to, as I said, it allowed me to kind of grow as my own person and heal from some of the wounds that I feel like as a kid, child actor, I got from the rejection and all that stuff, and to be able to just kind of have a basis of who I am. And it also helped shepherd kind of more of a faith. My family has always been, I kind of grew up, my parents found God when I was young-ish. I think I was like 5 or 6 when we started going to church. My parents started learning a little bit more about God. I am originally from Michigan. My whole family, my parents had never left Michigan until we moved for my brother's health. And my brother was a twin, born insanely prematurely. He was born 3.5 months early, but we ended up losing one of the twins, one of my brothers. But my brother was a miracle baby. My other brother, who did make it, his name's Andrew, he made it. And his lungs were just severely underdeveloped, and the cold from Michigan was really hard on his lungs. So we needed to move someplace warm. So my parents found Arizona, which is insanely warm. So it worked out perfectly. And my brother, who could barely walk because his lungs were so horrible, I think we moved when he was 4 and I was 6. And by the time we moved to Arizona, we were there like 2 weeks and he was already being able to swim and dive in the pool. His lungs had just developed so much better in the warmth, which was such a blessing in and of itself. But that's, my brother is kind of how my parents found God, because with the tragedy of the twins and not knowing my brother was in the NICU for over 100 days, because when he was born just over 1 pound. He was just the tiniest little thing. They kind of, through that experience and losing my other brother and trying to worry about whether my brother Andrew was going to live, they found God and found their faith and kind of kept it through all those years. They really were what showed me what faith kind of looked like. But what's kind of crazy is that we're kind of all learning to do it together. My parents were, they called themselves baby Christians at the time because they didn't really know anything about it. So we all kind of were learning together as a family, which I think made it so much closer for all of us. We were always very close. So I kind of was always grown up knowing about that, but I kind of really took my faith as my own as I was able to step out of the business and kind of be a teenager away from everything. And when you're kind of that age of angsty, wanting to know like what this world is about, it was nice to be able to be away from the industry and being away from that, to be able to kind of cultivate my own faith and my own identity as to who I am. Because when you're in the business at such a young age, it's like such a sheltered, people kind of tell you who you are, because it's like an oxymoron. You have to grow up so quickly and be a little adult at like 11 years old, but then they also tell you who you are. It's like as a kid, it's really hard to muddle through what's what. And so it was nice to be able to take a step back. And then when I went to high school, I tried theater for a little bit and I loved it, but it just didn't feel like, there was like always this cattiness because I was an actress and because I used to work, that I felt like it's some of my theater, people in theater were so catty with me about that, and I didn't want to deal with all of that, so I was like, I'll quit that and not do that, because I just didn't have the time or want to do that. So I instead found my own group of friends, which I still have to this day from high school, and was able to, in the very beginning, I got made fun of because I was Lava Girl, and it was usually in an endearing way. People would call me Lava Girl. It was like they were ribbing me. But, you know, in high school, everyone likes to make fun of everybody. And at the same time, Taylor Lautner, who played Sharkboy, was going to high school with me. So people would make fun of us because Sharkboy and Lava Girl went to the same high school. Knew that people were just ribbing us when they all, you know, loved the movie. So it just rolled right off my back. And I was able to make friends that, like I said, I still have to this day. And then all that space and time from the acting world allowed me to be able to make friends and people with people who kind of had no idea who I was in a certain way, because sometimes some of people when they were older didn't necessarily watch Sharkboy and Lava Girl. Actually, when I met my husband, funny enough, people used to call me Lava Girl, and he had no idea, because my husband's 10 years older than I am. He had no idea what a Lava Girl was, so he thought it was some really weird nickname from high school. And finally one day he was like, "Why do people call you that?" And I had to break, I was like, I'm an actor, I was a child actor, and I was this character, Lava Girl. He had absolutely no idea for like the first, I think like 5 months that I knew him, which was nice. It was nice to just be, you know, a normal human being. Went to college, graduated college, met my husband, which all of which would have never happened, and had two beautiful, amazing, wonderful kids, and was able to kind of somewhat live a normal life until Robert Rodriguez called me in 2019, because we shot in the fall of 2019 for the new movie We Can Be Heroes. I had just had my daughter, and she was 2 or 3 months old when I got a phone call from Robert telling me that he was wanting to bring back Sharkboy and Lava Girl for this new film, and that we'd have a daughter, and all this really fun, exciting stuff about this new movie. And was asking if I'd be willing to come back and play Lava Girl again after all these years. And it had been 15 years since Lava Girl first appeared in my life. So I was totally gung-ho for it. I was able to go right back to work a few months later. I got my butt into shape after being pregnant. So I had a few months to get back in shape and was in the fall filming We Can Be Heroes with Robert, getting to be Lava Girl again with my crazy pink hair. And they were so sweet to let my entire family come to Austin, Texas to film. So I had my kids with me, and it was just such a wonderful kind of reintroduction back into the business. And to me, just such a beautiful way that I felt like God was telling me that after all these years, I did the right thing by stepping away. My parents, actually, who made me, did the right thing by making me step away, because I was able to come back into the business from a new perspective as a mother, as an adult, as a wife, as a adult woman, to be able to make more decisions and know who I am now after all of these years. It was just such a beautiful thing. And I've told Robert this, but I have like such special feelings for Lava Girl, because she started my career twice now. She is light. That's her character. That's like her superpower, is that she's not just that she's lava. If you've seen the first movie, it's all about the fact that she discovers that she is light. And it's just, to me, such a beautiful kind of symbolism in everything to be able to come back as Lava Girl all these years later, who's just light. And I just kind of feel like that's what I'd love to be in this world if I can. Just would like to spread love and light.
And wouldn't we all? And a special thanks to Robbie and to Faith for producing and putting together that beautiful piece. Go to Netflix, We Can Be Heroes is the movie, and you get to see Lava Girl 15 years later. The story of Lava Girl, the story of Taylor Dooley, here on Our American Stories. Turn to Our American Stories. Up next, a story from our regular contributor and recipient of our Great American Storyteller Award, Joy Neal Kidney, who listens to us at our great station and partner, iHeart's WHO in Des Moines. Today, Joy shares with us a Civil War story about a family member entitled Killed on Independence Day. Take it away, Joy.
James Redfield of Wascata, Iowa, served only one term in the Iowa Senate. After the call for volunteers came from the White House, James Redfield became Lieutenant Colonel of Company H, 39th Iowa Infantry Regiment, during the Civil War. I've read that only single men were accepted as volunteers, but Redfield was a family man, as were others in his unit. Iowa still wasn't a state when he graduated from Yale in 1845. Redfield raised a company of soldiers, most of whom were from Indiana, ex-Hoosiers like himself. When they marched for the South later that year, there were at least three Marshall men along, the brothers Colin and Miles C., and a nephew, Clayton, all ex-Hoosiers. Old Miles Marshall of Economy, Indiana, was always an abolitionist. He and a great many others had hoped that the Whig Party would abolish slavery. Two of his sons, Colin and Miles C., better known as Bob, served in the war between the states. as well as three grandsons, Clayton, and two more in Indiana regiments. Several of Miles Marshall's children had already moved to Dallas County, Iowa, including one who platted the town of Dexter, and another who discovered and developed a mineral spring, which eventually became the popular Dexfield Amusement Park. Colin and Bob were the youngest brothers. According to C.E. Charles, an Indiana historian who was fascinated by the great number of Wayne County, Indiana families who relocated to Dallas County, Iowa, the Marshall brothers and their nephews were young farmers whose families would suffer from their absence. Colin owned a farm west of what is now Dexter. Struggling to get started in cattle feeding, he nevertheless talked over the war situation with his wife Sally and decided to enlist. A few months later, she wrote, "I thought I never could bear for Col to go in the war, but he thought it was his duty." After training, the 39th was sent to eastern Iowa, where they boarded steamboats and headed south to join the fight. Colin became second lieutenant of Company H. The spring of 1863, the Iowans were sent far into northeast Alabama, destroying railroads and anything else useful to the Confederates. North Alabama is the finest country I've seen in the South, but houses, barns, and fences alike are in ashes now. We let them know we were here. They gathered livestock, grain, and other supplies, believing that nothing less than complete defeat of the Confederates would end the war and get them home. While such measures hampered the military, they aroused the civilians, who struck back, harassing them any way they could. July 4th, 1863. A small force from Company H were camped near Iuka Springs, Mississippi, guarding a corral of cattle destined for the army, when news came of Vicksburg's surrender. When Colin's sister Minerva got the bad news, she wrote to relatives in Indiana what had happened that 4th of July. "I must first tell of the death of Col. He was shot the afternoon of the 4th while riding out about a mile from camp by a company of guerrillas, some 8 or 10 in number, who lay hid, then hallooed to surrender and fired a volley at the same time, 2 balls passing through the breast and 1 through the neck. His horse was wounded also. He raised his hand for them not to shoot, but they only wanted his life." A coffin was procured from Memphis, according to Minerva. Lieutenant Colin Marshall's body was embalmed and started home 2 days later, accompanied by his younger brother, Bob. 10 days later, Bob arrived in Redfield without the coffin of his 37-year-old brother. He got as far as Eddyville, Iowa, 80 miles from home, but there was no freight service from there. Apparently, according to Mr. Charles, steamers couldn't navigate the Des Moines River north of that point in July. Bob had his brother buried there temporarily, then came on alone. Their older brother, Pete Marshall, drove a team of horses and a wagon to Eddyville, returning home 7 days later with Colin's casket. He was buried in Masonic style on a hill at Wiscata. A military burial might have been more fitting, but there were not enough soldiers left around Redfield to accomplish that. 2 of old Miles Marshall's grandsons, Swain and Alonzo, also served with Indiana units. Alonzo was wounded by a mini ball, but finished the war working in a military hospital. Swain also survived the war, part of the victory parade in Washington, D.C. Their sister, Rhoda Marshall, had married a Tennessee man. When the war broke out, John Neal joined a Tennessee Confederate cavalry unit. But by then, they were living in her home state of Indiana, and his own brother had joined the Union. John deserted the Confederates and joined up with an Indiana cavalry unit. After the war, they too moved to Dallas County, Iowa. The Civil War and Other Letters of the Marshall Family are now owned by the Indiana Historical Society in Indianapolis. The loss of their lieutenant, Colin Marshall, was only the beginning of trouble for Company H. On the morning of July 7, their corral was surrounded by 500 rebels who captured 28 men, including nephew Clayton Marshall, and all the livestock. The Redfield men were marched over the mountains, some barefoot and poorly clothed because of the early morning surprise. They were shipped to the notorious prison at Belle Island, but they were later exchanged. Colonel James Redfield was wounded twice. First he was shot in the foot, then later in the leg, but he refused to leave his post. His life ended soon after when he was shot through the heart during the Battle of Allatoona Pass, Georgia, in October of 1864. He was 40 years old. Redfield's body was returned to Dallas County, where he is also buried in Wiscata Cemetery. A Civil War monument marks his grave. Founder of Yonder Town is carved on one side of the monument. You can see the town of Redfield from the hill where he's buried. Lieutenant Colin Marshall's grave is just to the southeast of the monument. After the war, local reunion groups of the GAR, or Grand Army of the Republic, built meeting halls. The GAR post in Redfield, Iowa, is named for Colin Marshall, who was killed in the war between the states on Independence Day, 1863.
And a beautiful job on the production by Monty Montgomery, and terrific storytelling, as always, by Joy Neal Kidney, reminding us that it was real-life human beings who strapped up in the North to free men. And so many of them were just farm boys. Many of them paid the ultimate price, as Lieutenant Colin Marshall did. On July 4th of all days, Independence Day of 1863, Joy Neal Kidney's Iowa Civil War Stories, and in the end, American Civil War Stories, here on Our American Stories. This is Our American Stories, and now we continue our series, Better Health at Lower Cost. And we've talked about blue zones. There are five regions in the world characterized by Dan Buettner in his book. Who are the actual people that live in these types of places? Today, we introduce you to two of the younger members of their community in Loma Linda, California, Zella and David Floor.
I was born in New Mexico in 1930, in the beginning of the Great Depression. My parents were relatively poor. So then I ended up going to Linwood Academy, which is an Adventist church school, and a PUC, Pacific Union College, which is an Adventist college in Northern California. And then I came here to Loma Linda to take the nurse's course. And I graduated in 1953, so I'm an old-timer around Loma Linda.
From an early age, probably, I wanted to be in forestry work. Ended up at Humboldt State University and got a degree in forest management, Bachelor of Science. And from there went to work for the United States Forest Service. 38 years later, I retired. Well, I was working on the San Bernardino National Forest, these mountains right over here. Yeah, I'd worked on there for 18 years, actually, all in different positions. And I'd just gone through a divorce and needed to start branching out a little bit after a couple of years. And my first wife and I were hardened square dancers.
Anyway, I was working following my divorce, and I had at that time two nearly grown girls. One of them was at PUC, and the other one was at Monterey Bay Academy. I needed to get myself in gear and earn some money to keep those kids in school. And so I left Salt Lake City, came here to Loma Linda, to my alma mater, and got a job in the medical center. And this was a long time ago, 40 years ago, in 76, 77, something like that. Mm-hmm. After a couple of years, I needed more of a social life. I was 48 years old. It may seem a little old, but it isn't. It's quite young. And so I had some friends who were square dancers, and they said, oh, well, we know a caller who is starting a new class, which of course took 8 or 9 months. When we were all through with our class, the square dance clubs came around and were inviting us to come to different places. So this square dance met in Highland and over here in San Bernardino, and they met on Sunday afternoons, which was perfect for me because I was working a shift in the hospital where I had to get up at 5:30 every morning. So I couldn't go in the evenings. So the afternoon was fine. Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock, I think it was, we had our square dance over there. So I met over there, and I think it was the second time we were there, he showed up. And the rest is history. Yeah. We were accidentally put in the same square. The caller says, find your square, and we ended up in the same square. And we ended up sitting the next one out, getting acquainted. Then 2 years later, we were married. He was not born and raised a Seventh-day Adventist, as I was. And so I come from a little bit different background, a different lifestyle, although not that much different.
No, I grew up as a Presbyterian. Well, then when I went to college, I kind of got away from church. It was come and go, you know, and now that I met Zella, it's been steady going to church every week for 40 years now.
The thing of it is, the Adventists go to church on Saturday, and so we don't do square dancing on that. So, you know, so he says, why can't we go square dancing on Friday night or Saturday? Well, I'm busy. Well, after a month or two, you know, what are you doing on? And I said, well, I go to church. What do I have to do to go to church with you? Well, you come pick me up and dress decently behave yourself, and then you can take me to church. And we were married at the age of around 50. In the meantime, I had cancer, breast cancer. In a healthful living person, it happens. About 6 months after we met, and then after we were married, we'd been married about 6 months, I had it again. The other breast, it was breast cancer each time. How does a healthy living person who is concentrating on being healthful get such a horrible thing as cancer? It happens. It happens among the best of us. I've got friends in here who have had cancer, That's no, healthful living is no indication that you're not going to have things go wrong with you. You know, we have genetic things that happen. We're living in a contaminated world. We've got inherited gene variants. You know, as we learn more about genetics, there are variants that come along that we inherit. And my mother had breast cancer. Her mother did. Her sister did. So it's there. It doesn't happen. I was tested to see if I had it in the genetic makeup, and I don't. I don't have it in the genetic makeup. It just happened. And that's what things are. But I feel that my cancer was 40 years ago. Count them, 40 years ago. And I count my survival from the breast cancer and my healthful life now because of the healthful condition I was in from my healthful living. Just because you get unhealthy things like this doesn't mean that it comes from your lifestyle. It can or it cannot, but a healthy lifestyle will help you to overcome the problems that we run into. When I was all through, I had chemotherapy for the second time. The first time I did not need any chemotherapy. I asked the doctor who was taking care of me to let me get a second opinion from someone just to make sure that we hadn't forgotten something. And he said, I think we'll just send you over to Stanford. Anyway, we went over to Stanford and saw this doctor. I can't remember his name now, it doesn't matter, because it was a long time ago. He probably has retired 40 years ago. And he said, everything is fine. You look good, you've had good treatment, you've had everything. He said, I have two things to tell you to do. Number one is to keep your weight down. And number two is to keep a positive attitude. Now, I myself broke those two things down. To keep my weight down, what do I need to do? You need to have a healthy diet. You need to exercise. You need to do all these things that go towards making you healthy. Fresh air, plenty of water, all of these things help to keep your weight down. And the second thing, how do you keep a positive frame of mind? It's your family. This is your surrounding, your support system. It's your family, it's your church, it's your attitude, your things that you do with your mind, how you keep active. I try to make it a habit to learn something new as I can. I read a lot. Now, I'm in my late 80s, and there are more people here in their 90s than you could shake a stick at. You know, they're just, we've got a couple here who are just hanging on for their 100th birthday, and they're doing fine. And I plan to be one of them one of these days. Not there yet.
Well, I ended up my career in San Francisco at the regional office of the Forest Service. And I retired, and we said, well, where are we gonna live? You can live anywhere you want in the world. We decided to move here. And so we've been looking at retirement communities and settled on this one, and everybody says, why? And I says, it feels like home. It's a wonderful place to live. It's a fun place to live.
We go to the Drayson 3 times a week. We go to a class over there that caters to us older people. But they call it chair aerobics. And so they do things that get our heart rate up, and we practice on balance, and we practice on things that are important for older people to keep from falling and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. We're very fortunate to be in a place where we have all these things for us to use. The one thing we appreciate about the Drayson Center is when you're over 80, we have the run of the gymnasium for free. We take advantage of it as much as we can. I go down there and walk the outside track. There's an outside track there that if you walk it twice, you've walked a mile. And we get down there. It's a quarter of a mile to walk up here to the gym. It's been a wonderful support to me, and that has been one of the things that has contributed to my good health, I'm sure. It has to be. I don't have any problems like that. So
you know, this Blue Zone thing, we talk a lot about it here. And there's nothing magic about Loma Linda. Everybody's come from someplace else that lives here. I mean, they come from Japan and all over the world. They've come here and they live here where we are. And so the Blue Zone is all over. It's a lifestyle.
And of course, I will have to say that we're not perfect in following the Blue Zone recommendations. You know, but all of us, we fall down occasionally. We eat too much ice cream, you know, that sort of thing. But generally, we try to live as healthy and close to our lifestyle as we can. Our healthy diet, our use of water, our exercise, our sleep, our rest, our sense of community, our family, and our faith and trust in God. Those are the things that make the Blue Zone.
And you've been listening to Zella and David Floor, and great job on that, Robbie, who went out to Loma Linda to study and to look at and learn from these remarkable people. Zella and David Floor's story, in the end, Loma Linda's story, and we're going to continue with more from this remarkable piece of earth in California, here on Our American Stories.